Hello, Beat Check listeners. I'm Gosia Wozniacka, and I'm the environmental justice reporter at The Oregonian. Today, I'm with Mike Rogaway, who covers the business of technology for The Oregonian and Oregon Live. Mike has written extensively about the biggest players on Oregon's business scene, including the semiconductor industry and data centers. And we're going to talk about the environmental impact of semiconductor factories, which it turns out is quite significant. We'll especially focus on Intel because it's Oregon's largest private employer, and we'll discuss how Intel is contributing to global warming and other ways straining our natural resources, and what the company is doing to improve the situation. So let's get started. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Gosia. It's good to be here.
So two things to keep in mind for our listeners. First, the semiconductor manufacturing is Oregon's largest manufacturing sector in terms of employment, exports, and contributions to the state GDP. Intel alone employs over 23,000 people, and it's the state's largest private employer, as I mentioned. And semiconductor chips are a critical product for our era. They're found in thousands of computer systems. We rely on them every day. They're in desktops, cell phones, medical devices, servers, etc. So those are the positives. It's a really important industry. But it turns out that there's also a darker side to chip making. And that's because the industry is not very clean from an environmental perspective. So I'm wondering, Mike, if you can tell us how semiconductor chips are made and why they're so polluting.
All right. Well, I think we think of semiconductors, and we picture the clean room and the bunny suits, and that's, you know, this sterile environment, you know, as sterile as an operating room, or actually much more so, where everything is pristine, because even a tiny bit of contamination could wreck the microscopic circuitry on these computer chips. But the process, it's, well, I'll start by saying that despite all this cleanliness and all this precision, semiconductor manufacturing is a heavy industry. It's like any other heavy industry, any large, like an auto manufacturer or anything else. There's enormous tools, enormous manufacturing tools, factory workers, and a lot of parts that and components go into the manufacturing process that have environmental consequences. So to be specific about how it's made, it's sort of this multi-stage process. And you start with a silicon wafer, which is essentially melted sand, melted into an ingot, these extremely high temperatures, and then sliced super thin and super flat. And then you put layers on top of it, on top of this, layers of metals or other material. Then you take essentially a photographic process called lithography, where you take ultraviolet light and imprint a pattern, a microscopic pattern, on the material atop the wafer. Then you use acids to etch it away, and then you add more material. Then this is a process that uses a lot of hazardous material, hazardous acids, hazardous gases, things like that, to produce these tiny wafers, or these tiny chips on these wafers.
How tiny are we talking about?
Well, you know, the circuitry on there, you know, we're talking billions of a meter. We're talking things that are like several atoms across. It's extremely small. The wafers that this is built on, they're the size of a dinner plate, but each individual chip's, you know, a small fraction of a postage stamp. And there's, you know, millions of transistors built into these tiny pieces of silicon. And that's the circuitry that provides the brains for our computers, our smartphones, our data centers, but also for our cars and our refrigerators and just about everything else in our lives these days has some kind of computer chip, some kind of brain operating.
Yeah, so absolutely essential. So you mentioned acids or chemicals that are used in the making of these chips. What else? That's obviously impacting to the environment. What else is part of this process?
Well, let's start with the energy footprint. You know, we have a company here in Portland that manufactures these silicon wafers. And as I mentioned, it takes a lot of energy to melt the sand to create these ingots that then become these wafers. That has a high carbon footprint. And then when you get in the factory, you know, we wrote earlier this month about Intel's new extreme ultraviolet lithography tool. It uses a laser that's hotter than the surface of the sun. Well, that takes an enormous amount of energy. And there are many other manufacturing tools that use a lot of energy too. When you clear away, when you etch away each layer from the chip when you make the circuitry and then etch away what you don't want, that circuitry, that washing away process uses a lot of water. And then there's hydrogen oxide, nitrogen dioxide, sulfurs, various other chemicals that are used at various stages of the process, some of which are ultimately released into the atmosphere. Now, they can be scrubbed to make them clean or in many cases benign. But to do that, you have to follow a precise process and make sure that it is safe to release, or at least at a threshold that the federal government and the state of Oregon consider safe.
Got it. And then your stories also mention water use. How does that work? Why is there so much water used in the manufacturing of chips?
Well, I mentioned washing away these layers. The chips are constantly being washed. So the manufacturing process, you know, each of these layers, it takes 3 to 6 months that a chip will spend from the time it starts the manufacturing process in the factory. The industry calls a semiconductor factory a fab, for a wafer fabrication facility. It takes months to go through this process. And at each stage, after you've printed using this photolithographic process, and then etched away the parts you don't want, you have to leave the circuitry you do want. You have to wash it away with water. And that water can be recycled, but only so long until it becomes unusable. And then you have to clean it and discharge it. So Intel's an enormous water consumer, as are other semiconductor manufacturers.
So massive amounts of energy, massive amounts of water, and toxic chemicals or acids. What are these companies, semiconductor companies, saying about this pollution? Do they acknowledge that it's that they're causing a big impact?
This is something they are very conscious of. Some industries have been resistant to acknowledging climate change and the role humans play in that. The tech industry has not been that way by and large, and it's certainly the case with semiconductor manufacturers. They accept the scientific consensus around climate change and are very conscious of their impact. And so they're doing things like others are. Intel spent, I believe it was $600 million. This isn't climate change specific, but when it comes to water recycling, water use, they spent $600 million for a water recycling facility at their manufacturing campus in Hillsboro. They have similar facilities going into other factories around the world. They work with Portland General Electric to finance and promote the construction of renewable power plants, mostly solar farms in Oregon and elsewhere. Those are sort of the low-hanging fruit. The issue the semiconductor industry has that other industries don't is that the chemicals they use are themselves contributors to climate change. The release of certain chemicals into the atmosphere has as much impact as, many millions of gallons of gasoline being burned in our cars. But you can't make the semiconductors without these chemicals, at least not according to the recipes that Intel and others have cooked up now. They're very reliant on these. And so they're all spending a lot of money, and outside groups are too, that their suppliers, to find more benign options that can both produce more advanced semiconductors and cleaner ones. This is a long-term process. This isn't something that we're looking at a breakthrough overnight. This is a very difficult problem for the industry, and one it recognizes and is investing heavily in. And they say they're confident that they're moving in the direction of finding chemicals with lower carbon impact or no carbon impact whatsoever, or at least one they can control. Prevent from becoming a major climate impact. But this is, as I say, a many-year process. It's not imminent.
But you mentioned earlier also that some of the newer technology used for making the high-end chips is getting more polluting, in fact, this ultraviolet lithography. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Intel and other chip makers are very excited about more advanced lithography tools, something called extreme ultraviolet lithography, which essentially uses very powerful lasers to create wavelength, to create light of very narrow wavelengths. And these narrow wavelengths enable smaller circuitry on the computer chip, which enables more powerful computers, essentially. But these lasers, being so powerful, use a great deal of electricity. You know, as I think we mentioned earlier, hotter than the surface of the sun, it takes a lot of energy to generate that. And there's really no way around that. This is the key to the next generation of computer chip, but it's very energy intensive. So there'll be enormous consequences with that. There are perhaps other issues at play too that I don't have a lot of clarity into, but we see Intel's in the process of increasing its main Oregon research factory. It's called D1X. It's increasing its size by a third by building a fourth module onto it. This enormous factory. It's the largest building in Oregon, be increasing its size by a third. But Intel has filed to and has received a permit from the state, from the Oregon Air Quality Regulators, that will allow it to double its emissions of greenhouse gases and various other pollutants. It's not clear to us on the outside why Intel thinks it needs such a high ceiling for these emissions. But I think we can make a couple suppositions. And one is that the energy use is going up. And the other is that the recipes that Intel is using to make these chips will involve more pollutants, either, you know, greenhouse gases or things with local emissions, as we mentioned earlier, nitrogen oxide, nitrogen dioxide, fluorides, sulfur, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, this is the reason why this story sparked my interest, because you just wrote about this air quality permit that Intel secured from the DEQ, Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, which, as you mentioned, allows the company a much larger emission cap, so it could pollute a lot more if it wanted to. What stood out to me is that today, already prior to this permit, Intel is the second biggest source of emissions in the state, the first being a cement company, and we're not counting electric utilities here. But Intel is already very high up on the list in terms of its emissions. And the permit would essentially bring it to the top spot if it came anywhere near emitting as much as the limit of the permit is. Is that right?
Yeah. I think, Gosha, you spotted that first, looking at the numbers, that they could potentially surpass this Ash Grove cement company. And cement is evidently has a very high carbon footprint. Cement manufacturing has a very high carbon footprint, which is something I wasn't necessarily aware of, and others may not have been either. I guess in some ways it shouldn't be shocking that Intel has one of Oregon's highest environmental footprints, considering, as we discussed at the beginning, they're the state's largest corporate employer. And they're the state's largest manufacturer. So it makes sense that they would have more emissions than other heavy industries. But it does have impacts. And, mm-hmm. you know, in addition to everything else, you know, semiconductors they're Oregon's main industry. It's our largest export. I am trying to recall, but I'll say it's somewhere around $12 billion a year in exports are semiconductors. It may be a little bit higher than that. So it's an enormous part of the state's economy. You know, the state economists a decade ago, I think, noted that the tech industry has a bigger economic impact on the state than the timber industry ever did. semiconductors are our distinctive industry. And so it's not shocking that such a large, heavy industry would have a large environmental footprint, but it does. And it's something we should be conscious of, I think, as a state.
And when it comes to these air permits, I mean, companies don't typically hit the limit, but they can come pretty close. And tell us it right now, in its with its current air permit, how close is Intel to hitting the cap?
Yeah, so our information about that has changed in the last couple of weeks. But under the old air quality permit, the one that they've just replaced with a new permit, they were allowed to emit 819,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalents annually. In practice, it was only about two-thirds of that, 500,000. Mm-hmm. But the trick is that until very recently, we thought, we thought Intel's emissions were lower than that. We thought it was around 400,000 the prior year. But Intel has recently notified the state that, in fact, they undercounted their emissions significantly for 2022. They were about 20% higher than Intel had reported. The state just issued them a reprimand for that.
We were talking about carbon dioxide, obviously, which is really important because it's, you know, impacts our whole state and our whole planet. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of chemicals that are involved in the manufacturing process. And I'm wondering if you can tell us what the air quality permit allows in terms of the increases of those chemicals, so other pollutants.
Right. Intel's main factory campus is, they now call it Gordon Moore Park, but it was formerly called Ronler Acres. Now it's Gordon Moore Park at Ronler Acres, Gordon Moore being one of Intel's co-founders. And it's, at one time, it was an agricultural area. You know, Hillsborough was largely agricultural and still is agriculture right outside there. But at one time, that's what it was. My understanding is that Ronler Acres maybe wasn't really farmed the way other areas around it was, at least not in later years, that it had sort of become an informal dump in the area, a trash dump. But then it was redeveloped as a manufacturing campus. And as Hillsborough developed, townhomes and apartments developed all around the campus. And so there are people living right there. And so it has, so there's real consciousness, not just to the greenhouse gases, as you say, that have an impact over the whole planet, but in what's being emitted locally. And so I'm just calling up now, you know, they have small particulates. The new permit allows a 66% increase in those. Nitrogen oxide, nitrogen dioxide, more or less double that. Carbon monoxide emissions increasing by 161%. Fluorides by 117%. Volatile organic compounds, 97%. Now, you know, the state feels that these emissions at these levels, you know, annually are within the ranges considered safe, and they did issue these permits. But if some of the neighbors around there have been concerned about this and have been concerned about this new permit.
And you just wrote about a lawsuit. There was a contractor who worked inside one of Intel's factories. I don't know if it's the same one that you were just mentioning, but the contractor sued the company, alleging he was injured by exposure to the toxic chemicals he was working with. Can you tell us if it was the same place that you were just discussing and what happened?
Yeah, it is. You know, in addition to the 23,000 people Intel employs, and maybe slightly under half of them are in one way or another connected with actual semiconductor manufacturing. Others have various kinds of corporate jobs. Intel has thousands or tens of thousands of contractors who work in its factories, servicing the manufacturing equipment, servicing the chemicals, that come in and out, and providing just general maintenance of their very large facility. So this was a fellow who worked for one of these contractors, Charter Construction. He was in the factory. He says he was exposed to chemicals that were being used inside the factory and wasn't given protective equipment. He says he lost his complete, this happened in 2022. He says in his lawsuit, He says he lost his sense of smell completely and partially lost his sense of taste. Now, this is a lawsuit. It has to be proven in court or demonstrated in court. So that process could take a long time. But there have been, over the years, regular industrial accidents at Intel and other semiconductor manufacturers in Oregon, Southwest Washington. There have been occasional injuries. And there was one death in 2017. Another contractor who was servicing a piece of equipment was crushed inside the piece of equipment. Again, this is a very large industry. It's not shocking that you would have industrial accidents or even a death occasionally, but you know, any accident is very serious, and any death, I think everyone in the industry would say, is too many. The industry and Intel in particular say they're very committed to safety with their neighbors and their workers, but there have been occasional incidents, and it's a reminder that this is a heavy industry.
Right, which it's funny, but I don't think we tend to think of tech as a heavy industry, but it is, based on everything that you describe.
No, I think that's it. We think of coders sitting at their computers, mm-hmm. And we don't think of the process that got that computer yeah. manufactured, got those chips manufactured, and got it to them. Yeah. Of course, chips are made all over the world. Chips made in the United States are subject to relatively strict environmental standards, compared to other parts of the world.
Yeah,
but they still have environmental consequences.
Obviously, these chemicals are pretty potent and can be damaging to human health under certain circumstances. And I'm wondering what environmental groups in Oregon are saying about Intel's pollution and Intel's new air quality permit, which allows it to increase certain chemicals. Are there any concerns, especially for impacts to local neighborhoods and to the city where Intel is located?
Well, I want to be clear that people aren't being alarmist about this. They're not saying, oh my God, this is a health crisis or anything like that. What they're expressing is concern. And I think they're primarily concerned about clarity about what's happening.
Hmm.
So if we go back a dozen years, Intel reported that it had been emitting fluorides from its manufacturing campus without reporting it or without a permit to do it.
Mm.
The fluoride emissions weren't at the level that were considered unsafe, but they hadn't been disclosed. And that sort of set off alarm bells for neighbors. They said, well, wait a minute, you know, what do we really know about what's happening there? And so out of that, the state imposed new monitoring standards, and Intel agreed to meetings with the neighbors that said, here's what we're doing and here's what we're emitting. I think the environmental groups, and I can't speak for them, but what you hear from groups like Neighbors for Clean Air is they want clarity about what's happening. They want clear communication. They're not saying shut down the factory. They say, we know that this is going to happen. You know, we recognize that this is an industrial site, but we want clarity about what's happening. And last year, Intel got fined from the state because it has these scrubbers that it uses to, when there are chemicals that are going to be emitted into the atmosphere, these scrubbers combine the chemical with liquids that are designed to neutralize the health impacts of that. Well, Intel left one of these scrubbers off for a couple months, and mm-hmm. so there were uncontrolled emissions, potentially toxic material. Nobody said there are any health issues from that one lapse, but it points to the clarity that people are seeking from this. And that was the main push, as I was hearing it, from this permit. They want careful mm-hmm. disclosure and careful air monitoring. The state DEQ, the State Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, issued a draft permit early this year outlining what they intended to include in the permit. Environmental groups and neighbors came back and they said, we want, you know, more air quality monitoring. We want more disclosure. There was more written into the final permit that then was issued in April. But the environmental groups are still concerned it may not be enough. And mm-hmm. we discussed the issues around the improper disclosure, the failed disclosure of greenhouse gas emissions. And I think mm-hmm. that's what's concerning, is what Intel says it's emitting may not always be what it's emitting.
Right.
And they want air quality, the neighbors and the environmental groups want air quality monitoring so that they know what is actually happening. And that's been the big push.
Yeah. And I think this is in general how the air quality system works. I mean, it's based on self-reporting. Companies self-report their emissions to the state once or twice a year, depending on the type of air quality permit that they have. But it sounds like here the neighbors want sort of a higher level and actual monitoring to make sure that the what the company says on paper is actually true, and to protect the neighbors in the area.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm not hearing people say, at least I'm not hearing most people say, or the environmental groups saying that, you know, we don't trust Intel or we think Intel's trying to violate its permit. I'm not hearing that. I'm not hearing that they think there's a great public immediate health hazard. They say they want clarity, transparency, and monitoring. And again, I don't want to speak for them. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in the case of Intel's greenhouse gas emissions, Intel did have a third-party verification system that it was required to use to verify that what it said about greenhouse gas emissions was accurate. Somehow, the third party also got it wrong. Intel made a mistake, and the third party verifying it also made a mistake. Right. So the state says Intel has to use a different third-party monitor from now on. You know, I think what I'm hearing is people want clarity. They want certainty about what's happening.
Yeah. And it's not a fail-proof system at the same time.
Clearly not, you know, between the fluorides, between the scrubber, and between the greenhouse gas emissions. Yeah. Yeah, it's clearly not foolproof. And you know, if you're living there, I think people want a clear understanding of what's happening in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you know, Intel and the neighbors have gone a long way toward that. There are regular meetings between them. There's regular discussions about what's happening at the factories, what's being emitted, what's changing. It hasn't satisfied everybody, and it's left concerns open about the degree to which what's being reported is what's actually happening.
Got it. But it's
because,
like,
as you say, it's not a foolproof system.
Right. It sounds like they're trying, but it's not perfect.
There's communication, at least, going on.
Well, and this whole thing makes me think about, you know, the fact that there's trade-offs for what we want as a society. You know, we need these chips, obviously, for the functioning of our high-tech society. But at the same time, they have a cost. And that, you know, as much as companies try to mitigate, you know, the impacts on the environment and neighbors, there may be times when it's not possible, you know, or when mistakes happen or when the system doesn't work, and there are costs. So it's kind of it just makes me think that, you know. And the other thing, of course, we should mention is Intel is not alone in semiconductor manufacturing in Oregon. There's other companies, right, in our state.
Yeah, as I say, it's our large industry. It's our signature industry, and we have Analog Devices, we have onsemi, we have Microchip Technology, we have Qorvo, Jira Semiconductor. There are a number of large semiconductor manufacturers. Intel is far and away the largest, but there are many others, and it extends from, you know, Hillsboro all the way out to Gresham, and then across the Columbia River in Southwest Washington and Camas, TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, has a large chip factory there.
And so obviously all these manufacturers have emissions and issues very similar to Intel's, just maybe on a slightly smaller scale.
Exactly, yeah.
One thing I also wanted to mention from what I've read is that some of these semiconductor fabs produce chips for wind turbines, solar arrays, and electric vehicles. Any of them in Oregon? Because I know Intel is pretty specialized and doesn't produce chips for those things. But are there any of the other companies you mentioned? Do they produce stuff for clean energy, essentially?
Yeah, Intel's main focus is advanced semiconductors. So these are things going in our newer laptops, they're going in data centers, they're going in supercomputers, and they might go to a degree in self-driving cars. But the kinds of things that show up in the everyday appliance or industrial equipment, things like that, all these other companies we mentioned, Microchip, onsemi, Analog Devices, they make these, we'll call them lower tech chips, although they're still extremely high tech, but they perform less sophisticated functions. Those have been in tremendous demand since the pandemic. There was a big chip shortage, as we all know, during the pandemic.
That's right.
And supply chains got snarled. And so there's great demand for these products. And yeah, they end up in everything from a wind turbine to an automobile, to the very kinds of clean energy solutions that we're hoping will address the climate footprint of the semiconductor industry. So to some degree, yes, it's a closed loop.
Yes, I think this it strikes me as incredibly maybe a little ironic or complicated, because we're trying to find solutions to our emission problem. We're trying to clean up our energy supply, and yet the very solutions that we come up with have tremendous environmental impacts that then in turn we have to address again. So it's kind of, like you said, a closed loop.
Right. And we're all part of this, as you indicated earlier. The computer that we're talking on right now, and that people are listening on, the smartphone they're listening on, it's all full of these advanced electronics, and it has an environmental consequence. There are ways to mitigate it, and people are working hard at that. But we need to bear in mind, as consumers, the impact of our
absolutely
actions.
Absolutely. Just to underline the idea of how important this industry is, we have not mentioned the fact that the federal government and the state of Oregon are giving semiconductor companies a huge amount of money to expand in the U.S. And hence to continue polluting. And this, again, like what we just mentioned, is kind of a contradiction, because those same governments, our state of Oregon and the federal government, are, racing as hard as possible to reduce emissions. But here they are betting and giving money, subsidizing an industry that is extremely polluting. Can you tell us how much Intel is getting, and whether anybody in the government sort of recognizes this this dichotomy of we're supporting this great industry that at the same time contributes to the very problems that we're trying to solve?
Yeah, well, in 2022, Congress passed the Federal CHIPS Act, and last year, 2023, the Oregon legislature passed the Oregon CHIPS Act. The Federal CHIPS Act is $52 billion. The Oregon CHIPS Act and associated legislation works out to around $500 million. Intel is getting $8.5 billion in subsidies from the federal government, and about $115 million from the state. Plus, they're getting $11 billion in favorable loans from the federal government to build new factories in Oregon, Arizona, and Ohio, and tax credits worth billions more. So it's a large incentive. Now, I think what the federal government would say, I'm not aware of people saying, oh, we need to be conscious of this impact. I think what the federal government would say is that these chips are going to be built somewhere. Right now, nearly all leading edge semiconductors are made in Taiwan or South Korea, two places that are geopolitically and geologically vulnerable. And they say too much of our economy is concentrated in a couple of very small, very sensitive places. And so they want more of that domestically. These chips are going to be made somewhere. Might as well make them in the United States, and the environmental impact is to some degree the same. Certainly the climate impact in either place. We haven't seen relaxation of environmental rules, to my knowledge, around this, nor have we seen higher standards with the new environmental requirements. What we did have in Oregon last year, when Intel was pushing for its, you know, for speedy review of its air quality permit is the governor's office. And this goes back to Governor Kate Brown, put more staff in the department so that they could review these permits more quickly and the companies could move faster. It didn't provide necessarily a lower standard for review, but it did provide expedited review.
Yeah, so they're getting a little bit of a special treatment. And I guess what you were, you know, mentioned before, you could argue that our environmental laws in the U.S. are perhaps stricter than those in other countries. And so making the, you know, locating companies here, you know, the government can at least make sure or try to make sure that they're following the rules, which might not be the case for other governments elsewhere. So that could be a positive.
It varies. And I'm not in a position to compare our permitting requirements to those in Taiwan or Germany, for example.
Yeah, I don't know about Germany, but I was thinking more in Asia.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there was concern when Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC, was planning to build in Arizona. There has been concern that environmental regulations in the U.S. had been impeding that construction. My observation would be that Intel has regularly built factories in the United States and has not found federal laws or state laws in Arizona to be impediment to its construction. It seems to have built what it wanted to build. So it doesn't seem like the laws are too strict for the industry as they are now, although they may be different from what companies in other countries are accustomed to dealing with.
As someone who reports on this industry on a regular basis, how do you feel about, this is strictly your opinion, do you feel like the industry will be able to clean up its ways eventually? Like, is this a process that's going to take many, many, many years? Is it, you know, are they coming close to sort of mitigating for their environmental impacts? Like, how, you know, is this something that we should be concerned with into the future?
I think, you know, as difficult as it is as the issue that we're having as a society with getting to clean energy, you know, that we've seen how much difficulty we've had in moving to renewable power. With the semiconductor industry, that's the low-hanging fruit. That's the easiest part.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part of this, is that it's going to be even harder for the semiconductor industry because the materials they use in the manufacturing process are themselves inherently polluting and have an inherent impact on climate change. You can't just switch to renewable energy. I think it's not clear at this point whether we can have our cake and eat it too, whether we can have our more advanced semiconductors and have more clean raw materials being used in the manufacturing process. I think the companies are committed to finding a way there. I just don't think we have clarity at this point as to how they will get there or how long it will take. You know, they're on that road. They're on that road, but we don't know yet how long that road is.
I'm also wondering if the issue of water will become will come to the forefront more, you know, with drier, hotter summers and weather in general across the world, you know, and droughts are very common now, you know, with the company being located in certain areas that have faced real droughts. And water shortages, and, you know, whether the calculus of using water, even if they can recycle some, they still need to use large amounts of it, whether that will, you know, eventually just become difficult to justify.
I think it's much less of an issue in Oregon because we are so wet and because we don't have the high volume manufacturing. In Oregon, Intel makes the recipes for its new chips. This is where the brains are. The muscle is elsewhere, largely. I mean, there is some high volume manufacturing here by Intel and others, but the really high volume manufacturing is in places like Arizona and Israel, which are very dry and speak very much to the point you were just making, Gosha. This is a curious decision that everyone is, and Samsung is expanding in Texas. Everyone is putting their chips in areas that have potential water issues. That may be an issue that can be addressed with with water recycling that to some degree. And clearly the companies think, because we know the water issues in Arizona are very clear, and yet we have all these companies, Intel and TSMC in particular, expanding quite substantially there. I think they must be confident that the water will be available to them, or else they wouldn't commit these tens of billions of dollars to it. But it is definitely something we need to be conscious of as a society, as we're choosing where these facilities are sited.
Fascinating. Well, thank you, Mike. This has been a super important conversation and a really interesting one. We'll be following this topic in the future stories at the Oregonian and OregonLive.com. And I'm going to drop a few links to your stories in the show notes so people can read more if they're interested. Thank you so much for listening to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like this show, please give us a 5-star rating and review an Apple Podcasts. The best way to support our journalism and stories like this is with a subscription to Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time, thank you.